Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AskMe People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AskMe People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
We're going to bring y'all to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, and with me, per usual, my master of all things video and sound, Maxime.
How's it going?
And my boy and producer, MT.
What's up, Dev Nation?
Gentlemen, fired up to announce that rejoining us after way too long, the former Golden State beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, who covered the rise of a dynasty, a high-profile sports author who's contributed to more media outlets than I can list, including Fox Sports Radio, Sports Central LA, and the Sporting Tribune, a sturdy defender who took a charge from Ron Artest and a nickname from Bruce Frazier, and a man who's less than a month away from his own wedding, Mr. Mark Medina. What's going on, Mark?
Bram, I would want to thank you once again for reading off the resume, but I would say that the last accomplishment is the most important and the most I'm proud of, that I'm going to be able to celebrate a big day with my fiance, Valerie. So excited all across the board.
Let me give you a lusty boo for that response. Boo!
I mean, what's wrong with that response?
That's just too ass-kissy. I mean, I know you and I know how much you love her and she's fantastic, but don't start this off with a pseudo ass-kissy love letter to your fiance. I mean,
wow. Nice, okay.
And to be fair to you, Mark, that pissy response has nothing to do to you. This is the first time we've watched our video open since Clay's left us, and I hadn't seen that little reference to the 37-point quarter. So really, that's just me being angry at circumstance and then apparently letting it out on you and your love life. So I feel like an asshole now, and I apologize, dude. I bet.
Hey, haters are gonna hate. I mean, Steph Curry's used to that. I'm used to it. So whatever. You just let it roll off your shoulder.
Yeah. As literally a certified hater, you are right. And this probably won't be the only time I do, in fact, hate. Let's find out together. I've got a ton of prediction questions, a whole bunch of preview stuff, a lot of Warrior-centric things. But before we get there, I don't always have someone I can do this segment with. And I think it's my favorite one, man. So it's the off-the-court report. The idea for this is that you, maybe more so than a lot of our guests, have access to these players who we care so much about, not only on the floor, but off of it. You get to interact with them in a way and in places that we don't. And so we love to try to take advantage of that. And we're catching it at a good time, man. So the MT, Maxime, I'm sure you guys have already been up on this, but Mark has recently written a few articles about Golden State guys from, you know, right in our backyard here. We've got one on TJD. We got one on Pajemski. We even had an article about Mully. So start with the young guys, Mark. With Trayce Jackson-Davis, Pajemski, what were your takeaways? Spending time with them, how did they impress you?
Well, I think the common theme from both of those players with Pods and Trayce Jackson-Javis is the fact that they're on the U.S. select team. They have a really positive outlook on the fact that they had to spend a week in Vegas going up against the Olympic team, what that will do for their confidence entering next season. They seem like they're fully prepared for having bigger roles. They acknowledge it's not going to be easy because mitigating kind of the gap with Klay Thompson's departure and having bigger roles for second-year players can always be a daunting task, but they felt like they were, you know, suited for it. But my favorite kind of nugget anecdote out of all this was I got Trayce Jackson-Davis' perspective on Brandon Podziemski taking an elbow shot from Joel Embiid in the scrimmage. Like, you all may have seen the footage where Joel just, like, clocked him. He's on the ground for a good few minutes, but he wound up staying in practice. And Trayce Jackson-Davis was telling me that Embiid went up to him and was complaining, like, why is the little guard trying to come in and get a rebound? And Jackson-Davis like, that's just how he is, man. Like, get over it. So I thought that was really cool how it epitomized how unafraid Pods is. He's this ruthless competitor. And while neither of them wanted to get necessarily extra physical with the players because they knew they don't want to cause an injury to any of the Olympic athletes, they did not want to back down whatsoever. And they wanted to show they're ready for the moment.
I love that story. MT, help me with this because this is me projecting probably. So I mentioned in the open, dude, Mark shared with us. In fact, we got a video when Mark was covering the Lakers and Artest was still there. They kind of playfully had a setup and then Mark went in and took a charge from Artest. I mean, he put his body on the line. Podziemski has quickly become known for charges. You know, he led the league last year as a rookie. It's kind of like his thing. If that's me, if I've got a history where I've taken a charge from Artest and then I'm interviewing Podziemski, do you know how quickly I'm bringing that up? I don't know how, but you know, like sometimes something, I might have the video on my phone. Like, oh, weird. I was just watching this. Would you like to see? So the question for you, MT, is do you think Mark worked it in? You know, like even just as like a subtle reference, like was there a moment when he brought it up with Podziemski? What's your guess?
My guess is no, he's not like you. He didn't find a way to work into the conversation. No, I think he abstained. I think he thought about it, but, you know, as close as a Embiid elbow is to a Ron Artest or Meta World Peace elbow, there's only one Ron Artest elbow and taking charges in the world. So Mark holds that crown.
Mark, what's the answer? Did you work it in?
Hey, Bram, you're going to get mad at me even more. Not only did I not work it never even crossed that mind to consider working it because I was self-aware that you can't compare a stage event where clearly Ron Artest is not playing at his most intense against me versus whatever Team USA opponents did against Pods. Now, in fairness, when I talked with Pods, it was before he caught the elbow from Joel Embiid, but he was going chapter and verse the whole season about reciting his favorite charges. He almost listed every single player on the select team. Like he was mentioning, yeah, I took one against AD, Nikola Jokic. Well, he's with Serbia, but he took one against Embiid and Ant and Devin Booker. But while we're on the subject matter, I was very amused with Pods' answer about taking a charge. Like I asked him, what is it like? Like, how would you describe the experience of just how your body feels both immediately after taking a charge and then the very next day? And he said, it feels good, actually. You know, a lot of people ask me if it hurts, but it never does. And then he went on later to explain that he's been able to learn how to, you know, make sure that he doesn't feel, you know, any sort of pain with how he positions his body. And I asked him, like, how does that work? Like, how do you feel good after, you know, getting bulldozed by a physical player? And he likened it to, if you're trying to breathe in and you hold your breath for like a long period of time and then someone hits you and then you let it all out, like you don't feel that all of a sudden. Like it was a very weird explanation, but when he explained it, it made sense to me.
What you guys don't know is that after the explanation, Podziemski then turned to Mark and said, you know what? I actually know you, you took a charge from Ron Artest. And Mark didn't hear it because he was just thinking about how much he loves his fiance. He was just staring off into the distance.
Very
no
true.
No idea what he was talking about at all.
Yeah, I was so I was so enamored of thinking about all the next wedding planning tasks that we had to take that I was just lost.
You're the guy. You're the reporter. Conversation. Right? You're the reporter who took the charge. It's like, do you know who I love? No, I'm talking about the. No, I just love her so much. It was well played. One thing about Pajemski and Maxime, let me throw this one your way. The thing that stuck out about Pajemski and his national team experience was not what he did with the national team, although I love that. I love that he got that experience, those kind of reps you can't replicate. But it was after that he went to the Summer League. You know, there is no better justification on earth to not playing in the Summer League if you've already played in Vegas with the best team currently in existence. You know, he already did what he needed to do. He would have been 1,000% justified to tell them, you know what, I'm going to sit out and wait for training camp. That's not what he did. He went over there and not only played, he played really well. Yeah. So again, me projecting. That's me. I go, but I'm not playing. I may wear my fucking Select jersey to the gym in Vegas and sit front row. You're like, oh, this? Oh, weird. Yeah, you know, no big deal. This is just a little Joel Embiid sweat from where he elbowed me in the face. Yep. For you, Maxime, would you do that? You think you'd show up? If you had already established what you needed to, would you put in the extra work in the Summer League?
Yeah, what Pajemski has established is that he's the type of dude that shows up to Summer League after playing for the Select team. And I think this is why, you know, Matt Ishbia might say, oh yeah, 28 out of 30 teams would trade their whole roster for Brandon Pajemski. I mean, he's beloved across the league for exactly this reason, from my assumption, right? So if anything, like him taking the charge, furthering his legacy, legacy in the course of one season, but furthering what people think of him as, I think the same thing is true for Summer League, right? It's an important way that he can show that he's about the same things consistently.
I don't feel like you answered whether or not you would do it, but I'll take the Brandon Pajemski response nonetheless. Mark, your article, you had Brandon tell you about the defensive advice Draymond gave him. What was it?
Oh, well, that was with Trayce Jackson-Davis.
I was testing you and you passed my test. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of advice, obviously, but the main thing that stuck out to him was that he talked about the importance of being early on rotations, that like even a couple inches makes a miles of a difference when it comes to, you know, being able to make defensive stops. And Draymond, you know, basically undercut his own self when giving this advice. He was saying, like, you're much more athletic than you are, you know, you're much more athletic than me. So you being able to be one or two steps ahead, even if it's just a few inches, makes even more of a difference than it is for me. So that was the main thing that he felt that Draymond spelling that out for him really crystallized in his head that sometimes at the end of the day, it's not just about your physicality and your talent. It's just about being organized. But it's not just about that. I think moving forward, one of the things that Trayce Jackson-Davis really emphasized was bulking up this past offseason in the weight room, and he's trying to become more vocal as a leader. And that's something that, you know, he wasn't really comfortable with it last season because he's a rookie, but he has felt more comfortable with the Summer League guys, and it seemed like talking to him that he felt more comfortable trying to exert that kind of influence with the actual roster next season. As we all know, as basketball fans, defensive communication is another key tool in being both a great team defender and individual defender.
I'm going to turn this into an ask kissy compliment before a question. All right. Compliment. Mark, I love having you on. You know that. I love that I can give you shit in the beginning. It doesn't matter. But far more importantly for the listeners and the information you bring, I love your objectivity. We're going to have some prediction questions coming here, you know, and we need somebody who's not rooting for Golden State to drop some predictions. Objectivity. I need it now. All right. I really believe in Brandon Pajemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis's future. After last year, they were the lone young bright spot on a kind of a frustrating season. And so where they could go is a pretty rosy if I asked anyone in this room, because we all root for them and we're kind of wrapped up in their future. Yeah. So objectivity, how do you view them? I mean, do you think are solid rotation players? Joe Lacob was recently quoted as saying, we think we have an all-star in Pajemski. when you look at these guys, you know, what's your perspective?
Yeah, they're certainly more than rotation players. I mean, that's the bare minimum, and that's already established. I mean, I think the low-hanging fruit is Trace Jackson Davis. He's going to be an all defensive team. That's number one. Number two, I wouldn't project all-star immediately, but I do think that once their careers are all said and done, both players will have made multiple all-star appearances. And so I think this illustrates when we're looking at how the Warriors have looked at their roster and what moves maybe on the horizon, a la the Lauri Markkanen discussions. I don't think it's happening because one, Danny Ainge, as we all know, always wants a boatload of things in return, and the Warriors aren't having it with shipping off their young players or draft picks. And I think part of it is because they're just very high on both how these players are with their potential, what they've already shown, and just what their character is goes as far as just their work ethic and their potential into having to have, you know, bigger roles because of all the roster transition this past summer, most notably with Clay's departure.
I got another Olympic question here, but I got to take the low-hanging fruit. Yeah, let's get you a prediction question right now because we're going to do this down the line. Gentlemen, who goes to the most All-Star games over their career? Brandon Podziemski, Trace Jackson Davis, or Jonathan Kuminga?
Ooh. I think I'm going to go with Jonathan Kuminga. I mean, honestly, I think either of these players have a case for it, but I'm going to go with Kuminga because we've seen even more of a body of work. And I think that because of the fact that he is a front court player, but he can defend, you know, both front court players and back court players and wings, that'll give him an extra calling card and selling point as far as what he can do defensively. I love Brandon Podziemski, but, you know, he's obviously a guard and, you know, he's going to be defending twos and threes, where Kuminga, he's defending everyone. And obviously Trace Jackson Davis can be the same, but I think obviously Kuminga's a little bit more developed at this point in his career.
Mark, I'm going to give you the Rosetta Stone to this show. If I don't know what the hell the answer should be, I just start farming it out to other people. Watch this. MT, what's your guess, dude?
I agree with Mark for a little different reasons. I think because of the competition at the guard and center play spots in the Western Conference, I don't see Trace and Pods breaking through that. I think they'll be great players, but is Pods going to unseat Gilgeous Alexander? Is Trace going to unseat Wemby? Like, probably not. I think Kuminga has the best shot at, you know, sneaking in as a three or four. So I would give it to Kuminga, but mostly because of who they have to beat out for that All-Star spot.
Add Joker to that center spot too, in addition to Wemby. I have been pretty transparent about what I think Kuminga's upside is. And so for purposes of this, you know, if I'm going to call myself being too rosy and optimistic, let's be too rosy and optimistic. I say Kuminga reaches those potentials. And so I still take JK. I think his floor is a lot lower than these other guys. And we don't know where the hell he's going to reach, right? But we'll probably find out this season. Finish this out. Maxime, what's your answer?
Not just to be contrarian, I actually think it might be Podziemski. I see the point. You know, he's battling against other positions. But also, isn't the reserves now positionless? And those are also voted on by the coaches. I mean, already in his rookie season, Podziemski's getting more minutes than Jonathan Kuminga. Granted, that's Steve Kerr and some of his idiosyncrasies, but you could see that the coaches around the league really respect and value the little things that Podziemski is doing at the margins. I think there's a really good chance that he's kind of the darling of the back half of the All-Star voting.
For those who aren't watching on video, one, you should be. It's ridiculous that you're not. And we have nothing but exceptional YouTube content all over our channel. But two, you also just missed Maxime giving both Marcus and I a middle finger during that response with his whole stupid ass no positions on the reserve team, because it's pointless and he didn't have to point that out. To our next article from Mark, the last Warrior he recently wrote about is an oldie but goodie, Chris Mullin. And Mully became petty king for a week, which always speaks to me. I guess the Serbian coach for the men's Olympic team said that his current Serbian team was better than the Dream Team. And instead of ignoring it, Mully had this to say, quote, "He needs to wake up. maybe jump in the Serbian Sea or something to wake his ass up a little bit. So I really enjoy any petty shit from Mully. Nicely done. That doesn't lead to the question, is the Serbian team better than the Dream Team? I'm going to go ahead and guess no on that. But this Olympic team, and I just had this fight. I grabbed a drink with somebody, and they baited me into it. You know, they asked me, which team do you think was better? And it's obvious they just wanted to be pissy. So we had the fight back and forth. So the question is, which team is better? This year, the 2024 men's Olympic team or the iconic 92 Dream Team? To kind of help set the stage, here are the rosters. Let's start with this year. Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Ant Edwards, Joel Embiid, he of the incredible elbows, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, LeBron James, Jason Tatum, and Derek, I am much better than Jaylen Brown White. The roster for the Dream Team. And I'm going to include some ages because I think it's important when you're making the ultimate decision here. Christian Laettner, David Robinson, Pat Ewing, Larry Bird, 35, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Clyde Drexler, 30, Karl Malone, John Stockton, 30, Chris Mullin, Charles Barkley, 29, Magic Johnson, 32. Mark, take this one first. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to go deep dive. This is going to be like a full ass analysis. But just your initial take, hearing those rosters, they line them up, best of seven, who wins the series?
Yeah, I think you outlined it really well, and it's really the main point that Chris Mullin made to me beyond, you know, being one of the proud former Hall of Famers and old vets. The 92 Dream Team, the fact that most of those players are more experienced than this current group, because when you look at this current group, yes, LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry are the most experienced, but then there is a drop off in not just talent, but just the amount of years where most of them, like Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum, are in their mid 20s. And so I think from top to bottom talent wise, the 92 Dream Team has more depth and experience than the current group. But we obviously have to add the qualifiers that the current US team is facing a lot better competition. In 92, the Dream Team went up against teams that had a combined 13 NBA players on those rosters, where in 2024, Canada already has 10, Australia has 9, France has 5. So the competition is better. But even with that obvious caveat, head-to-head, the Dream Team would beat this year's team.
I could have used you, Mark. Shit. So the person I had this fight with is a guy named we can't bleep that name for the live stream here, but go ahead and bleep it for the podcast. And I wish I had when I was talking to one, I wish I could have casually dropped, well, when I was talking to a member of the 92 Dream Team, he told me, so I didn't have that. So nicely played by you, Mark. Two, he was using the ages against me. What he was talking about is, you know, Magic Johnson wasn't Magic Johnson. Barkley was too old. You know, he was using those ages to cut them down. I love the way you flip that on its head. You know, that the age is an upside, not a downside. So I was saying the 92. I'll stick with it. I know that listens. Fuck you. Turns out I got Medina on my side. Gentlemen, who do you agree with here?
First of all, I just had to look this up. The Serbia is definitely landlocked. There is no Serbian Sea. So I'm still in the back of my mind trying to process that information. But also, I don't know. Like, I've heard that comment before about
Serbian Sea.
Yeah, about the Serbian Sea, and
it's a common saying.
Continue to, you know, maybe it's like a El Dorado or whatever. It's there. You just got to go searching for it.
Just got to jump in it.
I don't know. I think it. You know, these questions about like goats from different eras. It's also how the game is played. There's just so much more sort of off ball movement, outside shooting in a way that the folks of the 92 Dream Team were not habituated to. I think if you're putting them in a modern context, like the way that we can space the floor, we being the 2024 Dream Team, is pretty elite. And I don't know, they're just such different styles of play. Maybe you give the edge to the 92 Dream Team just because, like, I think as a collection of individual talent, they're probably a little bit better. But man, as a team, there's a lot to be said for where we are right now. I mean, it's such a position of luxury either way, but I guess I give it to 92.
Clean sweep, MT?
Laughing. I got a text from my wife 2 minutes ago, and it just says, jump in the Serbian sea to wake his ass up, LOL. So she apparently heard you say that too.
Oh, she probably knows about the Serbian sea too. That, or it's just such a common saying. She was just dropping that to you.
You finally found a way to work in the most common
phrase. Yeah, there it is. That's exactly right. It had nothing to do with what, you know, you thought it was podcast related, but no, it's just common text.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go current team, but just because of the current rules that they're being officiated by. I agree that the experience makes a huge factor and that the 92 team probably would win. But I just think given today's rules, and even though FIBA is a little more physical than the NBA, I still think today's players are just trained and have grown up in a system where they're just elite athletes at a different level. So I think that pushes them over the top just barely. And because our last player is Halliburton and their last player is Leitner, I think when it comes down to the depth, I still like the current team's 2024's team's depth a little bit better. Just in terms of like star power, they're not future stars yet to your everybody's point, but I think they pull up a little bit of an upset and win.
So when you said current rules, you mean there's a rule that they have to play everyone on the roster when they play? It's like, you got to empty them all out. Leitner needs to get out there and lace them up.
I mean, you do a platoon style and you add and you send off the bench, Anthony Edwards and, you know, like Bam Adebayo and Kevin Durant, like, you know, dream team. Or not, like any team is going to have trouble dealing with that bench unit.
Jokes aside, the part that speaks to me, what you're saying, is human evolution. I mean, I'm looking at the list from this year's team. There was nobody in 1992 who played like Kevin Durant. Nobody. There wasn't a guy who did that. You know, you didn't have 7-footers who could reliably shoot the three. And so there would have been a problem. Also, though, there's nobody from this year's team who knows how to deal with the physicality that that 96 team could play with, you know, and it does. I mean, we have this foregone conclusion they'd be playing by these rules. We don't have to assume that. It's up to us. Maybe they play by 96 rules, you know, and like who knows how they would go. So I think there's an argument on each side just so I can preserve my fuck take. Still 3-1, 92. Suck on that. All right. Prediction time. So we're getting close enough to the season where we get to start using these pods to predict how it's going to play out. But just dropping predictions is boring, Mark, and I like to bet. So we're going to use both your name and the idea you're one of the names that you use when writing and one of the outlets you write for, and the idea that I like sports betting for a segment I'm calling Sports Keto Book. I've got a series of questions here. Each of them, imagine that you have to bet something significant to you, mortgage payment, rent payment, something, some large number. Here's the first question. Who will be wearing a Warriors jersey at some point next season? A, Lauri Markkanen, B, Brandon Ingram, C, Jeremy Grant, D, Jimmy Butler, E, someone else, some other player whose salary is above $25 million, right? So just a good player, someone, a difference maker who'd be coming in here, or finally, F, none of the above. So options: Lauri Markkanen, Brandon Ingram, Jeremy Grant, Jimmy Butler, another player of similar quality to be named later, or none of the above. Or put differently, will the Warriors add a difference maker this year? And who it is, or who would it be if so? I haven't gone first. I will. I go E, someone else. I think what's going to happen is that they are not going to make a move before this season begins. They're going to stay in the market. They're going to wait for someone to become unhappy, you know, whatever it is, whatever team didn't work out the way it was supposed to. Someone will become available before the trade deadline, and then the Warriors re-engage, throw down, and go after that player. So I don't think any of these guys we're hearing. Sounds like Markkanen is off the table. I'm not that interested in Ingram. Butler is one of those names who could fit in here, you know, but I'm not going to limit myself to that. I'm going E, someone who we have not yet heard. Whoever wants to go next, go ahead and take it.
Yeah, Bram, I'm going to go F. I have the same thought process you have, but I haven't thought of E only because I don't think that any move is going to be made this offseason, and I can't think hypothetically of who that someone else is. But with Laurie Markkanen, you know, I think that they like his skill set, but they're also cognizant of the fact that a lot of these numbers were produced on non-winning teams. I think, secondly, they have question marks about Brandon Ingram, even though he's a great two-way talent. I think questions about his consistency and what he can be, you know, as far as reliable in the playoffs, given what we saw in Oklahoma City. I think Jimmy Butler, they love him, but they don't like his injury history, and they'd much rather have roster depth and young players than another old veteran. And who was the other player you listed, or did I?
Jeremy Grant.
I don't think they view him as a missing playoff or championship puzzle piece.
Yeah. MT?
I'm going to go Jeremy Grant. I think Danny Ainge has priced himself out of us doing any business with him and probably anybody in the league. I agree. I think Brandon Ingram, like Steve Kerr benched Brandon Ingram when he played for Team USA. And I think there's a lack of consistency, like Mark said, that they view with him. So I don't think he's the right player. We've done deals with Portland in the past. I know there was a little bit of dust up of the picks and if GP2 was hurt or not and all of that. But I think that's water under the bridge now. We do more business with them. And I think they're trying to get off of either Grant or Simons. And I think if we offer them our two first round picks and maybe like Moody, you know, I think that they at least don't hang up on us right away and we talk about it. So I'm gonna go Grant. And then if it's not Grant, then I think it's F. I agree that I think we wait until February.
Grant or bust. Quick credit to Danny Ainge before we get Maxime's take here. So just negotiating. Yeah, negotiating 101. I mean, I negotiate for a living. Negotiating on 101, if you're selling something, you want more than one person buying it because they drive up the price. Just practical reality, dude. If I'm selling my car to one person, I can't play that person off the other. I can't get the price up. Danny Ainge's ability seemingly to create like, oh, I'm selling this player and then broadcasting that out to everybody and then not actually making the deal. So making it known that like there's at least one person here and artificially raising the value on that player because now everyone else in the league knows at least this one person is going after them and there's interest there and I'm going to at least have to beat that other party is really impressive to me. And he has been able to do that more than a few times. All right, Maxime, we've got a Jeremy Grant. We've got a someone else who hasn't been named. We've got a probably no one. Who's your guess, man?
It's probably no one, but I think also, didn't I hear you say that we said at some point this season, I think a lot of stuff is going to shake out after the trade deadline, and the Warriors of the recent past are not the type of team to make trade deadline moves, but this is not the GM of the recent past, and I could see something like that happening after the trade deadline when stuff shakes up, but it definitely won't be Lauri Markkanen, because it looks like he's, you know, if he's not coming in the next few days, he's signing that extension, which makes him ineligible to be traded for the year. But the options
are $25 million or up, right? So post February, they could add somebody, but we're talking buyouts. You know, like it wouldn't be right. It's not going to be the kind of difference making player we're talking about now.
Yeah. And it just doesn't seem like the market is going to be there. I'm hoping for a Jeremy Grant, but I also don't know that I know we're trying to go all in for Steph. I'm on board for that. In theory, but it's pretty hard to give up two first round picks for somebody that I don't think moves the needle enough to actually win us a championship.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Mark MT, this one's exclusively for you boys because Maxime and I handled it at length last week. The number is 0.5. Over under. Question is, how many teams does Steph Curry play for over his career? And the way we did it, we've had these quotes recently, a couple of them from Curry, not saying he's not happy, but for the first time, at least, leaving the door open. Maybe I'd go somewhere else. So what do you think? Over, under?
Under. And I don't think it's that close. It's one thing for Lakeup and Mike D to lose Clay and let him walk out of the door. You don't do that with Steph too. If you lose 2/3 of that dynasty trio, and especially Steph being the second one, then you might as well just look for another job. So,
It won't be them. I mean, it's not like they're going to be like, "Steph, get the fuck out of here." I'm sure whatever they won't. They're not going to give Steph Clay's treatment. I think the question will be, will Steph decide? You know what? This place doesn't give me the best of shots. Maybe I want to go chase a fifth ring somewhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, that'll be Mike Dunleavy not doing a good enough job as a GM or Joe Lacob not supporting it with the checkbook. So,
yeah. And you think they will. You have faith in them that they'll keep the ship straight enough where he has no reason to jump.
I do.
Mark, do you agree?
I agree. Barring the very, very, very unlikely scenario that all of a sudden Chris Cohen becomes the Warriors owner again, I don't think Steph Curry is going anywhere. I think there's a legitimate question to be asked. Is Steph Curry going to win another NBA title? But I think that he's always going to be on a team that at least has a shot at winning and is always going to be a playoff team. So I think that's going to keep him engaged enough to also play and also trust the front office enough that they're at least being competent and they're being aggressive sure. with possible moves. I think there is that sliver of possibility of him weighing, okay, would it be cool to play in Charlotte because of the connection with his dad and his hometown? But even I don't think that Steph would go down that road either, because I think even if the last few years of his career do not coincide with being on a championship caliber team, you can still get the farewell tour treatment and being one of those rare superstars that, in the modern NBA that stuck with one team.
I'll give you a phenomenal counter argument. And to do that, go to Warriors Huddle and listen to last week's episode. It was phenomenally well done, and I won't drag us back through, but we did give some good reasons about why it might be the over. Mark, keep the mic. Who plays more games next season, Joel Embiid or Draymond Green? To give you a little background, different things holding them back, Joel's body, and the numbers there's a much larger difference than I anticipated. I liked the question, but the actual stats make the question a little bit ridiculous. Joel Embiid played 39 games last year. Draymond Green, because of suspension and otherwise, played 55. Who do you take, Embiid or Draymond? Who's on the floor more frequently?
Well, this is all relative because I don't think either player's playing all 82, but I have more optimism that Draymond will have fewer suspensions than Joel will have fewer injuries. And so that's not to say that Draymond all of a sudden is becoming a Cub Scout and being right. very nice to the officials, but he's not going to at least clock someone in the face, and he's not going to put someone in a chokehold. I know the bar is low, but that's a victory in and of itself, given last season.
Is it weird that I love the idea that the way that they are going to welcome in slow-mo is just Draymond's going to be like the main person out there, and they come in and they just immediately unify on hatred of all French centers, that they just cannot stand Rudy Gobert, and they just watch various footage of each of them beating the shit out of Rudy Gobert and realizing we've always been best friends. Like, who knew that actually we were best friends the entire time? Let me change the question to make it a more impactful one. Over under 65 games played for Draymond Green. What do you guys take? I take the over.
65?
Mm-hmm. Played 55 last year. And they need him, right? I mean, yeah. There's no question they need him desperately. If there's ever been a season where he's aiming for Boy Scout, not that he will be, and we don't want him to be. He's not that. What he adds to this team requires him to not be a Boy Scout. That is not what I want. But you do want him to be on the floor, right? And he knows that. So with that kind of in tow, 65 over under.
If Maddie Stats is listening, I'm going to go real aggressive, and I'm going to say push. Think he's going to be right at 65.
Oh, nice.
If that happens, I expect double points, even triple from Matty Stats on that one.
I think Matty Stats died. You may notice that I don't notice it, like, mention his name anymore. It's because I'm not getting any updates from him. So he may be dead by a radio somewhere. I don't know.
All right. Well, Matty Stats, you're still alive. You're all right. Yeah. So I'm going to go push. I think he hits 65 on the head. I agree that he doesn't turn to a Boy Scout, but he's heard enough how important he was and how much he derailed last season by not being on the floor. And I think he is smart enough to make sure that doesn't happen again this season.
First of all, I'm sorry. I'm just cracking up over Dead by a Radio. Like, he's sitting there, like, turning the dial, trying to find us on the radio, not realizing that we're not on FM or AM. And eventually he's just like, I can't do it anymore, and just collapses in just despair either. And death.
I don't know why you're laughing. It's a sad story. That is terrible.
Maddie, if you're there, stop using the radio, man. This is all the webs now.
He's dead. What do you mean?
Okay, fair. Boy, I hope it's the over, but I'm taking the under.
Oh. Mark, I already made you answer a Draymond question, but give us an over-under.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over, but it's only a slight over. I think he's going to play exactly 68 games. I'm looking at his career log numbers. He is not... he's only gone over the 70 games once since 17-18. So I think because of where he's at in his career, he's 34. He's going to be 35 next March. You never wish injuries on anyone, but just the reality of the game and his stage of his career. There's going to be some games missed because of ailments. But I do think that he's going to miss more games because of that than because of any suspension. So again, not a Boy Scout, but he's on much better behavior. He's going to be more available. And I think another silver lining with this is that he's going to be more available because there's a reason for him to be available. You may recall in the 2019-20 season, I mean, he wound up not playing a lot of games because it was clear the team was going to be terrible. Sure. He had his own injuries. I think there's a lot of questions on where they fit in the Western Conference, but I think they're at least going to be competitive, and I think that they're at least going to make a case to be a play-in team, maybe a sixth seed. And so because of that, he's going to be available on most nights. But 68 of those nights.
No, I understand. And it's a guy who he understands his impact, his need, and where the team is in the standings and how he can impact that. All right, quick hit, boys, because I've dragged us through this a little slowly. We are going longer than I promised. So think about them, but let's move through them faster than we've moved through the last few. Here's our first. Who plays more minutes next year, Brandon Pajemski or Jonathan Kuminga? MT, take this one first.
Oof. Pods.
I'll say JK. I think they need him to take a leap. I'm continuing to be optimistic. He makes the leap, but not by much. Not the minutes, not by much. It's going to be close.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Pods because of Clay's departure and the fact that even though Kuminga is going to have a big role, they have other front court players they can rely on.
Right, and at the same time, you know, this Pods continuing to take a step up means that in the games when it's not as important, hopefully, because we're blowing them all out, Steph could get a little bit more rest. I think It was like something like 26.6 minutes per game for Pods and 26.3 minutes per game for JK. So it's clear last season they were in competition, which is just ridiculous that a rookie is outplaying Jonathan Kuminga in his third year. But I bet it's going to happen again.
Who finishes higher in the standings, boys? Mark, take this one first. Dallas or Golden State?
Yeah, I mean, I know you're going to throw some F-bombs at me, but yeah, Dallas, they got to the finals, and now they have Clay. So
this is one of those ones I'm punting on. Gentlemen, what's your guys' guess?
Wait, what do you mean punting on? What?
It's Dallas. God damn it. I don't here's as currently constructed, Dallas. It's obvious to me that Golden State is not done with this roster construction, but I don't think they're going to add anybody in time to get ahead of them in the standings. So it's Dallas, but I don't want this to be construed when the playoffs start. Do I definitely think that Dallas is a better team? No, it just depends on who Golden State's able to add. And I do think, as I was saying earlier, I think there's another piece to this puzzle we don't have yet. Looking at the puzzles currently constructed, yeah, of course it's Dallas. I mean, even I guess I'm willing to admit that, but I didn't want to say it, which is what I meant by punt. But here I am. You forced me into it, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's Dallas too, unfortunately, if we're betting stuff and Matty Stats is resurrecting himself and keeping track of this. But I think Dallas falls off more than people are anticipating. He wasn't an all-star, but Derrick Jones Jr. and Josh Green were important pieces of that team. They hustled, they did the dirty work, they were really good on defense, and you're replacing them with Najee Marshall and Klay Thompson. Najee, you could argue, is, you know, comparable defensively, but, you know, like, it's a step down defensively from Klay. So I don't know if they keep up the same trajectory as they did at the end of the season, where they were number one defense, and, you know, like, I think Gafford and Lively come down to earth a little bit, and they're not as strong as they were last season.
Here's how petty I am. I just considered a joke where we bleep Clay's name every time we say it from the rest of the season. I don't know if we should actually do that, but, you know, just spitballing, no bad ideas in a brainstorm, boys. Before you two answer it, I'm going to change it. Okay. Different team. Keep Golden State. Who finishes higher in the standards, the Warriors or the Memphis Grizzlies? Because I think the Memphis Grizzlies are the most forgotten franchise on the face of the sporting planet. And by all accounts, Ja Morant, what happened last year wasn't some physical thing. He's perfectly fine and is a dominant player who is coming back in full bore. And when nobody talks about Memphis, we've all completely forgotten about them. And I think they are going to return to the standings next season. So who finishes higher in the standings, gentlemen, Golden State or Memphis?
I mean, I agree. Didn't his agent send out a tweet through Shams that was basically like, oh, he's here. He's here for all of it. Like, that's like the one person who's probably most, going to get value out of that tweet going out. It's like, of course you're leaking that. Well, but I think he has been forgotten about.
And their team, I mean, what happened last year for Triple J, you know, or even Bane. I mean, all of them, the kind of work they got and the kind of exposure they got with Ja out, they all got better, and then they're re-adding Ja Morant. I'm not – it's an open question. The way I'm phrasing it's making me think – or making it seem like I think it's Memphis. I don't, but I do think that – they have to be considered because nobody even talks about them when they're dropping the playoff teams for the West. And I think they're going to be a part of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to think that Ja Morant is not going to come back in excellent shape. And that team looked real good before his suspension and chaos. I want to point out we're live here. You know, it's not just us four in the room. There are other people joining us. Omega Hex continues to drop the comment that everybody is underestimating the Dubs this year, but I think they're going to surprise people. So it's not, you know, there's the potential here for the Dubs to do something. And I'm going to be with Omega Hex. Let's go. I'd say the Dubs are going to finish higher in the standings in Memphis.
We appreciate you, Omega Hex. That a boy.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Omega and Maxime, but I think Memphis finishes higher. it was an injury, to be fair to Ja. Like, he did have to season-ending surgery on his shoulder. He was playing well before that. But I agree, Bram. I think they're completely forgotten, and they're a dangerous, dangerous team. as constructed. Marcus Smart's still there. G.G. Jackson is underrated.
Got better.
And, you know, they just have a solid team. I think them losing Steven Adams is a bigger blow than they're willing to admit. But I could see them finishing, you know, maybe as a four seed. And I don't think the Warriors get that high.
You agree, Mark? Golden State or Memphis? Who's higher?
Well, keep throwing the F-bombs at me. I'm going Memphis. We have to keep in mind, when Jacques came back from his suspension, they had a really good case to be made that they could climb out of the bottom of the Western Conference and make the playoffs, even though they were last for almost a nearly one-fourth of the season. That's how good Ja Morant is, and most everyone's back since Steven Adams. But I will leave you with this. I can see a scenario where the Grizzlies have a better regular season record than the Warriors, but then they kind of crash and burn in the playoffs, and the Warriors are still left standing because of, well, Steph and Draymond. But just when you look at the past experience with Memphis, sometimes they overexert themselves in the regular season, and all of a sudden they're running out of juice for when it counts.
No F-bombs for me, Mark. Nicely handled, which leads to our last thing. Cause a little setup. All right. So we're on the other side of the Olympic opening ceremony, and this year they did it via boat, right? They're all cruising down the river, and there's a video that surfaced on that USA boat. All the teams are there, including the ping pong team and the USA basketball team. And Anthony Edwards has almost famously and universally said that he's good at everything. You bring up a sport, Anthony Edwards will tell you that he is better at you at that sport. And that's a very interesting take to have at the Olympics, where everyone is the best at their respective sports. And so Steph Curry knows that. And he finds the USA Olympic ping pong team and brings them over to Ant Edwards and tells the Olympic ping pong team that Edwards thinks he can beat them. And they have a whole back and forth where Edwards ultimately says, you know what? I think I can at least take a point off of you guys. If we've got that video, let's play it here. Sam.
And what, ping pong? That's right. Actually, I got some people talking about they gonna beat me in ping pong 21-0. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'm not having it. 11-0. I'm scoring 1 point. One point. I'm scoring.
I mean, there's only one way to try it out.
What? Okay. How? When are we gonna do that? Whenever.
I demand we have a reality TV series with Ant Edwards immediately. Like wherever, I don't know, Netflix, whoever needs to do this, they need to do it immediately. The I'm not having it line. I think he believes that. I do not think that that was for the camera. I think that he genuinely thinks that he can put up at least 1 point on that U.S. Olympic ping pong team. And also, if that became a pay-per-view event, I would pay. I mean, like, not a lot, but I'd pay $10 to watch him get his ass beat like 100-0 in ping pong. So I am immediately on board, but I have two follow-up questions. Question number one, do you guys think that Ant Edwards could take a point off the Olympic ping pong team? Is there any chance on earth that that actually happens?
There's video of Ant Edwards playing ping pong a year or two ago, and he's actually good. So,
crazy Olympic good though, like the way that you know, like they play hella far away from the table and hold it all crazy.
Fair enough. I think if the Olympic players are locked in and playing seriously, no. But you know, like in that situation when you're playing against somebody else, like an NBA player, I think it's impossible for them to take it seriously enough to where he doesn't get at least 1 point.
It's like that scene, where Denzel Washington plays Ray Allen in, I'm forgetting the Spike Lee
movie. He got game,
right? And they've supposedly rolled the ball out, and Ray Allen is supposed to beat Denzel 21-0, and he doesn't take it seriously, and Denzel scores the first three fucking points. And then Ray Allen gets very serious, and the scoring stops. But the real question I wanted to ask you, gentlemen, do you guys think there is any professional sport out there where you could have a modicum of success, you know, the equivalent of scoring 1 point in a ping pong game? Could you do one successful thing against a professional athlete? You know, break a single tackle, make contact with a major league pitch, you know, like anything across the board. Could you do something in professional sports? Because I do not think you guys can, and I'm ready to shithouse you if any of you says yes. I cannot wait for your responses.
Hey, Bram, did you like forget my resume, getting the steal off of Nick Young, taking the charge for Metal World Peace? I mean, come on.
Let's go.
Got the receipts.
I would win the gold medal for most charges taken. Move over, Pods.
I don't know if they give out gold medals for that, Mark, but I think if they did.
They got breakdancing as a sport here. I think in 2028 in L.A., they got to bring a specific basketball event to complement the 3-on-3 competition. Let's see who can take the most charges.
I think if I got super lucky in curling, you know, like if somebody else, if I had like that whole team of like the brushers and shit and they were on charge, I might be able to sneak one in that little area. I've never curled, but I maybe could get in there.
It's just like shuffleboard.
Feels like it. And then I have like the whole team of brushers, you know, maybe they could help me out.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. I think most people underestimate how good a professional athlete is at their respective sport. None of us are ever hitting a baseball. And so you can just scratch that one off the list. Sure. But I don't think, I mean, if we can
break a tackle
Olympic sports, then I think I could sneak past the screen and throw up a three and get lucky enough to hit it if it was 3-on-3. Or power walking. I feel like I could dominate that.
He would be destroyed in power walking.
Let me tell you, every time I watch, I'm just like, I can do that. Like,
they would destroy you. You could do it, but you'd lose. You'd be in last place by 1,000%. The
I got long legs, brother. I got long legs.
If you set like 15 screens, you know, if what we're talking about is just hitting a wide open jumper, maybe, but even then, you know, if anybody's guarding me, I think that would be super hard. Mark, Maxime, is there a sport? Power walking?
Okay, first of all, I went to school with somebody that went to the Junior Olympics for power walking. That shit is hard, and the hardest part about it is you always have to have one foot on the ground. MT, you would break your hip by like lap three. It is painful. And I think that's the point that people don't really get with like all of these sports, is like to actually get to the Olympic level, there's so many people that are good at this stuff for everything. I mean, for everything. That if you actually got to get to the Olympic level, like, you got to be excellent. I think
I just want to say, if I had to bet my life on whether or not one of us knew a power walker, I would have bet on you, Maxime, and I would have bet it in a heartbeat. Go ahead.
Well, it's too bad we didn't get the opportunity to test that. But yeah, shouts to that guy. It's a strange sport to get really addicted to. But regardless, I think Anthony Edwards is onto something. Ping pong, you could just sit there and just wait for them to mess up, right? That's the type of things like, oops, I missed a serve, right? Especially when they're going as hard as they can. You could just like luck into a point. And then the other thing is, if we're allowed to be a part of a team, like curling, I'm definitely joining the women's and basketball team, because they just smoke the competition so hard that I could go out there and probably get something. I don't know if that counts or not, but
no, it does. So Mark will turn to you, and I'm going to shift it a little bit, because I've had this conversational talk with other people, and the way I normally ask it is, could you be involved and get away with a play where the telestrators who are watching it didn't circle you and be like, what the hell is this guy doing? You know, like I could be on the football field in the offensive line, and if they weren't running my direction, I might not destroy the play, right? But if they watched it and they saw me get thrown to the ground immediately, they'd be like, oh my God, what happened to this guy? Like, you know, and that would be true everywhere. Power walking, but look how far behind he is. I mean, like, whatever it was, women's basketball, I'd be throwing up because I was so out of shape. They'd have to circle me like, oh, look at this guy. I don't think you're supposed to be throwing up back there. So could you do anything in professional sports? For those not
that's
watching,
my boy.
Yeah. Marcus just became a power walker with his background. Could you do any sport?
They're all trailing me in this video.
Yeah. Okay. What it doesn't show, we can't see your hip. It's actually broken from all the force you've gone forward. But Mark, finish this off. Is there a sport you could do where you wouldn't get circled?
There would be only one sport, and it would be in one very specific circumstance. It would be in track and field with any of the relay events. I want to be circled when I'm standing on one part of the track waiting for the baton. But as soon as I'm getting the baton, then that's when I'd get circled, because regardless of whether I'm having to catch up or I have a sizable lead, I would fall flat on my face.
Yeah, and the circle would happen fast. Like, oh, yes. This, I don't think that's what they wanted out of the transition. You know?
No, it would not be pretty.
Taking a baton is also terrifying. I don't know if anybody's ever had, it's just like the amount of skill that goes into just having your hand back and being in sync as you go. Holy shit.
I'm sure. I mean, it's a specific ass skill. All right, boys. Huge fun. Mark, needed you, missed you. You delivered per usual. I am positive I'm not the only person who's happy to have more Bedina in my life for the rest of us. Where should they go?
Well, of course, always go to Warriors Huddle. But writing, Sportskeeda, Sporting Tribune. Let's see, Twitter. I'm at @MarkG_Medina. The radio is Fox Sports, TV Spectrum Sportsnet, and CBSLA.
We are on social media at all places. The only one I really want to underline today is YouTube. We are really exploring our YouTube presence. That channel is exploding. Hop on to YouTube, search Warriors Huddle. You will see it there. You can also send us an email. Want to know that we're doing a good job, bad job, any job. You can shoot us an email too.
Huddle@warriorshuddle.com.
Two more shout outs. One to Omega Hex. Another quote from him. Love him for it. Been listening to you guys for like 7 or 8 years. It's cool seeing you on YouTube. We appreciate you. If you would like to drop live comments and maybe have them read on here, follow us on YouTube. You'll see it there. And then a little bit more somber, but important to say, rest in peace, Matty Stats. We hope that your time by that giant radio in the sky is going well. With that in mind, go Warriors. And hopefully we'll talk to you real soon.
Good, good.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us.
Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us.
Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination.
One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.